Good morning. Welcome to Dig in the Dirt. I'm very excited this week to have a guest from a very long ways away. He's in Quito, Ecuador. It is Peter Hoff. He is the developer of Forest in a Box, which is a fabulous way to keep a tree alive when you plant it in an arid desert. He's from the Netherlands, and he is a former breeder of flowers and a longtime grower of tulips and lilies, and he's given up in 2003 what he was doing to produce water from the air without using energy to plant trees in dry areas. Welcome, Peter.
Hello, good morning. I'm very happy that you have invited me to speak with your listeners.
Yes. Okay. So I guess first let's start with how did you go from being a plant grower to a this is sort of like a plant sustainer. I mean, it's definitely related. Well, it's definitely related. But how did you even get this idea of the forest in the box, or the notion that we needed to do this kind of reforestation?
You know, as in my former company, when I was developing new varieties of lilies, I traveled all around the world to my clients. I exported to about 50 countries, and I loved to visit them, but all of my clients were using drip irrigation, and in all their countries, the water tables drop and drop and drop, and they are dropping with very, very high speed. Now, I think the danger of dropping water tables is perhaps even bigger than the climate change. So I got worried about that and started to think about, is there no other solution to plant? And once I was driving in Italy, I had kind of a flow, and I had an idea to make water through condensation. And at that time, I just continued with my company, but I wrote the idea down. And in 2003, I became 50, and I thought, you know, it's really important somebody is going to solve that water problem. And I decided to sell my company and devote myself to it.
Okay, so so let's describe the forest in a box, what it is, how it works.
Well, the box is actually looking like a donut. So you have an opening in the middle. We plant a little tree or a shrub. You can even do vegetable in the center. And around that center is the box, which is like, a bucket. But the bucket has a cover. And that cover has some special capacities that allow the box to make condensation in the morning or during the night and in the morning and catch that water. And in the same time, when you have a rain shower, deserts have more rain than we think, then that water is also collected and captured. And I found a way that you have an opening big enough to capture a heavy rain shower, but once it is in the box, it cannot evaporate anymore, so you create a water battery. And then in the bottom of the box, there is a small wick, and that wick is tapping water every day, about 50 cubic centimeter, milliliter, to that little plant that is planted in the center of the box. So what you actually do is that you help that little plant in the first year, tapping its roots a few meters deep, where there is natural water available for him to survive. But only in the first year he cannot survive because it's too dry on top of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he does.
Okay, so when you do this, how long does the box stay in place?
There are countries where 6 months is enough. You know, you have, for instance, countries with two rain seasons.
Oh.
So you just help a little plant from one from the dry period to the next rain season, and then it can grow on its own.
Uh-huh.
Then where you have severe circumstances, like in real deserts or Mojave deserts, for instance, in California, mm-hmm. you need a box 1 year.
And
then
can you
lift.
Go ahead.
Then you lift the box because the stem is still very flexible. And you start to plant the next tree with one box. You can plant in 10 years, so 10 to 20 trees or shrubs or vegetables.
Uh-huh. So you can keep reusing it. That's great. Now, the picture that that I saw of it, it looks kind of like a circular wooden staircase.
Yeah.
But that's the outside of the box. Inside is the mm-hmm. wicking mechanism and the container for collecting the moisture.
Yeah.
When Astoria had these 200 trees that we planted in a summer, and a number of them did very poorly, we could have used this for our dry season, and then by the next season, we probably would have had a lot better growth and fewer trees died, right?
Yeah, the nice thing of the box is that in most of the places, we can actually plant 52 weeks per year. In general, you can say that if it is warmer, you have even a better result because the water in the box isolates the soil. So you can compare that when you have a swimming pool, even if it's all day in the sun, you can still nicely swim in the evening without being it too hot. So below the box, the soil temperature is average, where the roots feel very comfortable. Mm-hmm. So even when you plant in May or in June, you have no problems planting. And this means that it allows you to plant your garden or desert areas always when you like it, instead of now that you have to plant it in a certain month.
Right, when it's cooler or warmer or whatever. So the box actually is an insulator as well.
It is. And even in the night, water gives its energy to the soil, which means that the energy comes from the water into the soil. So during the day, it's cooler. During the night, it is a heater.
Oh, God, that is great. Okay, so let's talk about, you did a test with this in the Sahara Desert, right?
Yeah.
Will you talk about that?
I can tell you a little bit about the development of the box. I started in 2003, and first I had to find out whether the principles worked. In 2005, I found that it did, but I had done my trials in Holland, where, of course, it's not really desert-like. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Sahara Desert between 2006 and 2009. I did 4 years of trials, and I found 88% survival. And then I thought, okay, the proof that it is that it is possible that it works seems to be done well. But I have to tell you, during those 4 years, I only had 25 handmade boxes. So I decided to make 30,000 boxes in 2010 and plant those 30,000 boxes all over the world. We had such good success that in the beginning of 2011, we did again 40,000 boxes.
Wow.
And we are now in more than 30 countries, and it's really going very well. In average, we have above 90%. There are places where we have from 40 to 70%. But that depends on the quality of the plant. So we are also working very hard on improving the quality of the plant, because another thing that we have learned is that your success rate is also depending very much on the root that you have below your plant. You can even have good circumstances, but if your roots are not functioning well, you still will have a failure result.
So are you talking about that the plant was not well grown or the root system isn't properly developed to be in the ground yet?
I will explain you what I mean. Every plant that multiplies in nature starts with a seed. And when you look below that seed, it starts with what we call a primary root. And the primary root is capable to even penetrate rocks. Now, if you look to the plant that you buy in shop or that nurseries produce, this primary root is destroyed because when it comes at the bottom of the plastic pot, it cannot grow anymore, and then the root divides in what we call secondary roots. But secondary roots only grow lateral. They do not grow deep. So we are now developing a new kind of plant pot in which you develop a primary root that is not destroyed. Now, if we use that plant, and we're doing 20,000 boxes with trials now in the coming 2 months, if you plant that kind of root, it is able to penetrate every dry soil or even rocks without any problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I estimate that if you use that combination of the perfect root and a water box, that on places where we find now between 40 to 70%, that we will there also go to above 90%.
So you were saying that you could plant really anything in this box, whether vegetable, shrub, or a tree. Are there places on the planet where you can't even grow vegetables without this kind of help?
You have many places. Actually, I have found that many deserts have more water than you think. Many deserts have let's say 4 to 12 inches, which is over a million of gallon per acre. But the problem is that water falls only in a week. So because the soil is very hard, it goes down to the lowest place, then into a river, and a week later it is in the sea.
Mm-hmm.
So many times it's not so much the quantity, it is more the peak that is the problem in a desert.
Mm-hmm.
So by catching that water in this little box, you fix it in a battery-like system, mm-hmm. and then you give that water all the time to the plant. So many times the soil is fertile, so they are able to grow in those kinds of places.
Right. The trick is to keep the water there long enough to get the plant growing.
Exactly. That's the trick. And then there's another thing. Over the last 2,000 years, mankind has cut about 5 billion of acres of forest worldwide, in every country almost, which means that once those trees have grown there, and because of the fact that we've cut it, that land is now eroded, but in principle, if trees grew there, they are able to grow there again. So I'm not really focusing on the middle of the Sahara Desert. I'm much more focusing on all those areas that we have cut ourselves and destroyed ourselves, which means that if the area was small enough to cut, we are also able to replant it because it is also small enough to replant.
So you're talking about the edges of the desert, working from the outside in?
Exactly, because there are also people living there. In mm-hmm. the center of desert, there are no people, so who has to do it?
Right. That's true. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. You're listening to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine. I'm with Peter Hoff, and he is the developer of Forest in a Box, and we will talk more in a moment. You're listening to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and I'm with Peter Hoff. He is a Dutch plant breeder and developer of Forest in a Box to make plants survive in deserts and reforest and deal with the fact that the water table keeps dropping precipitously and making water less available for us in lots of ways, for agriculture, for growing plants, and for drinking. Welcome back, Peter.
Hello.
Okay, so let's talk some more about the countries that you've done planting in. You've been in a lot of countries. Can you name some of them?
Yeah, we're doing trials in seven Middle East countries like Bahrain, Oman, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Jordan, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, but also in China and India, in the United States, California area. We're doing trials and now in Ecuador, where we planted last week, and in Peru, where we have planted just before the weekend. So we're actually trying to plant every place that that has problems with water quantity and where people do not know how to plant without irrigation.
And so in Peru and Ecuador, what kind of plants are you planting?
Actually, what I focus on is always try to motivate people to use fruit trees or fruit shrubs, because I believe that if we want to reforest the world, that's a dream of me. I want to cause that we are going to reforest the world mm-hmm. with a technology that is so cheap that you cannot even not do it. But I want to do that with trees that are producing economical, interesting products. Mm-hmm. It can be extracts or medicines or food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're obviously doing a combination of fruit trees and medicinal plants. So it could be a tree that has medicinal purposes. Could it be something like cinnamon?
Yeah, actually we just planted cinnamon this weekend in Peru.
Uh-huh.
But in general, I always try to stimulate that people choose a native tree, because with a native tree, you almost have a guarantee that you will have good success, because that tree has proved to be capable of surviving under those circumstances.
Okay, so well, what about in the Sahara Desert? Do we know what was native there before they were all chopped down?
Well, I give you an example. In Morocco, I have planted argana. Argana is an extremely strong tree. It doesn't need almost any water. It's capable of growing on few rocks, but it's producing a fruit like, an olive like fruit. They also press it, and the argana oil is extremely requested. It's about $35 per liter. So this way, you restore the land with trees that are native, mm-hmm. So you do restoration, you do anti-erosion, and in the same time, you create a living for the people who plant them.
So are governments involved with this?
Almost only governments are doing it. In every country, I'm doing with governmental organizations, almost every country. Actually, not in the United States, to be honest, but...
am I surprised?
That is perhaps because you have very big countries. It's very difficult to reach the government in Washington. That's difficult for a Dutch person. Hmm. But I think that, in some smaller countries, it's a little bit easier to approach those institutes, ministries.
So when you approach leaders in other countries in the world, they are seized by this idea. They get it. They want to participate. They want to plant and have more success with their reforestation efforts, or they're even interested in reforestation. That's even interesting to me.
Yeah, it's a combination. Some countries, like in the Middle East, they are now making their water through reverse osmosis, which is extremely expensive. Uh-huh. Many countries have problems with raising food prices. In most of the food countries, prices have gone up with 200% over the last 5 years.
Oh, wow.
That's creating a lot of unrest. So people see also the combination in lack of food, unrest under the population, mm-hmm. Erosion, climate change. So, and the tree is the best solution to that.
Right. If you can plant something that's going to survive and produce food, then people are independent. They don't have to worry about going to the store or the shop or the market for as much of their food.
Exactly. And there's something. In areas where you have sufficient rain, but when it's falling only over 1 month, you cannot sow crops like corn or wheat because they need every month a little bit of rain. But the tree is able to survive even 11 months of drought without any problem, and it can still produce 5 to 10 tons of food per year. So it is a very attractive alternative for all those crops that need monthly water because water is scarce. And to give monthly water to those kind of crops makes the scarcity even bigger. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way with the forest in the box, if it's if the plant is drying out, if you have access to water it?
Well, we find that in most of the countries there's sufficient water for the plant. If we fill the box once and then during the year there's some rain or condensation. When the soil is very, very salty, then sometimes we have to do a refill because the wheat has a very nice characteristic. When the soil is requiring more water, and more salt means that you need more water, mm-hmm. then the wheat also gives more water automatically.
Oh, but it is possible to refill it if it's necessary.
In those circumstances, for instance, in Bahrain, we had to do refill because the soil was very, very salty.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if people want to either know more about the forest in a box, or they want to get some, or they want to get involved with a project in somewhere they know that needs some successful replanting, how can they do that?
Well, what I would like to ask people is to read my website. In the website, I tell them what my dream is. My dream is to cause the reforestation of the world with trees producing fruit. And I hope that when they read my message, and I have also some videos on it, that they also get inspired and start to be active in their own areas or their own country. And right. The name of the website is a combination of Grow and Oasis. So it's www.growoasis.com. Without the W in it, by the way.
Right. GROASIS.com. It's a very friendly website. And so people can order the boxes, right?
Yeah, there's a wet shop over there, and we can send the minimum quantity is 10 boxes, so you can do your own trial if you like it. We have lots of manuals on it and films where we show you how to do it. And then, well, I say to the people, spread the message.
That is good. Okay, and then if people want to ask you questions on the website, is there a place to do that?
Yeah, there's a good FAQ that we keep up. And my own address is there, so people can send their questions, and I will answer them.
Okay. So you spend most of your time out of the country, out of the Netherlands, traveling the world and setting up projects and doing, making connections with governments and people and helping people start their reforestation projects?
Yeah, it's kind of a dream for me, and I have the happy thing that I love to travel. So I give you an example. In the last 2 months, I visited 14 countries.
Wow.
And everywhere I meet people, many times ministers, but also enthusiastic people who are just lovers of nature, investors, and teach how the technology works, but also developing financial interesting models. For instance, I was just in Mexico 2 weeks ago, where we are talking about an area of a little bit more than 1 million acres that's going to be financed through carbon credits.
What is that?
Well, it means that you can actually start to replant lost areas that are not productive anymore, to replant them again with productive trees, but you finance that with the income of carbon credits. So companies who pollute the air with carbon have to pay taxes, and from that tax money, we can reforest very big areas. That's a very interesting business model for people who have bigger areas of land who have not the possibility to finance to replant this. But here the nice thing is my technology is so cheap that the money from the carbon credit is enough to do the reforestation.
It's brilliant. It's a great idea. So how many acres are you replanting in Mexico?
What is we are there talking about an area of 1.2 million acres in Baja California.
Wow, that is great. And are particular plants, what are you going to plant?
They're all going to be fruit trees. And for instance, one of the trees that they're going to plant is Tara. But you have many areas there who are good enough to plant mango and avocados. So it depends a little bit. You have to look very well to the precipitation that you have. So you have areas with 200 millimeters, there you go for taras, but with over 400 millimeters, you can go to the mango. So it depends.
Oh, that sounds great. I like it. I mean, and a mango is a huge tree that can produce, one tree can produce a huge amount of food.
That's true. That's why it's interesting. But and what's important for your for the people to understand is this. The great technology is a way to plant. It is not irrigation. So we plant in a different way, in such a way that the tree afterwards is able to survive on its own. Mm-hmm. So that's why I look to that precipitation. It means that suppose you have 12 inches of rain and you plant a tree that needs 15 inches of rain, it will die after we have planted it. But if you plant a tree that needs 11 inches of rain, it will absolutely survive after you've planted it. So we always look to the local circumstances. And then choose the trees that fit in that climate.
It makes sense to me. I mean, obviously, you want to have success. And do you think that people can get involved? Like, let's say if someone says, well, I want to get involved with that planting in Baja California. I either want to donate to it or I want to help with it. How can they do that?
Well, I suggest that you think about your own country. I've been in California pretty a lot of times. We have fantastic projects with the Palm Springs School District. We've planted there last year with over 600 students, and we're actually looking for a funder to follow up. So if you want to help, contact the Palm Springs School District with Scientific Director Pete Ahern, and give him some funds to continue the program in 2012. That's my question to your listeners.
Oh, great. Okay, how many trees have you planted in Palm Springs?
We've done, with 600 students, everybody has planted 2 trees. And we want to expand the program, do more research. And if you want to support it, we do so. And another program we're doing is with the Sonoma Ecology Center. There we have also done just a plantation a few weeks ago. So if you are nearby Sonoma, then please contact the Sonoma Ecology Center and support them to expand their programs also.
Yeah,
I would be very grateful for that.
In the Palm Springs schools, what did you plant down there?
We've gone to 5 national parks, and for instance, whitewater, desert palms, and we've done trials with all kinds of varieties, Palo Verde, also Taras, and we are having a very good result, but we can still improve them. That's why we continue the program.
Sure.
The nice thing is also that the students get a theoretical program, which is around this, because what people many times do not think of is a tree is like a machine. You know, it's making sugars, it's making fruit, it's unbinding carbon dioxide. You can talk about conversation, about capillary in the soil. So the students learn a lot about that a tree is not just a thing growing, but it's like a very big factory producing all kinds of good things for us.
It's always great to get kids involved with this because you want them to grow up and know that plants are as important as we are.
Exactly. If you go to my website, to the photo gallery, I have many photos and also YouTube films in my YouTube channel about those plantations in Palm Springs, and you can actually see what we've done. And when you see them, you really get wild with it.
That is great. Well, it has been great having you, Peter. I want to let you know that this program will be rebroadcast this evening on KCPB 90.9 FM Warrenton at 8:30. And it will be within about an hour. It will be available as a podcast, a free downloadable podcast at coastradio.org. So you can send that link to any of your friends, your listeners, and have them hear what Peter's doing and get involved with reforesting the world. I'm sure together we can do a lot. And with this information, I think a lot of people can do something. We could all do something.
Exactly.
And thank you very much, Peter, for calling in today.
Yes, it was a pleasure and a really big honor that you gave me the opportunity to tell the people in the United States about my dream. And I hope that people get inspired by it and do their own little part of it. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much. And I want to let you know that next week, Yvonne Edwards will be here. She is a PhD psychologist. We'll be talking about goal setting. Next week will be the last one of my programs of 2011. Will be a 2-year health, and we'll be talking about setting goals for the next year.